You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
I'm Deanne Jennings, and I'm here to share data and dive into the world of finance with you.
Advisors associated with Prout Financial Design may be either 1, registered representatives with and securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC, and investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, or 2, solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, and not affiliated with LPL Financial. Investment advice offered through CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, CG Advisory Services, and Prout Financial Design are separate entities from LPL Financial. Dennis Prout and Nathan Prout are solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services and are not affiliated with LPL Financial. The opinions voiced in this show program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriately qualified professional before making a decision.
By WTCM News Talk 580 on a Thursday, about 8 minutes after the hour, time for New Retirement Radio with Prout Financial Design in Traverse City, Michigan, with Mr. Dennis Prout. Good morning, sir.
It is so good to be here. Thank you, Ron. Did you say 12/14? Indeed it is.
12/14.
I've got it written down, and I thought I'd say it again, but what the heck? You've already said it, I think.
Unless you're listening to the replay on Saturday the 16th.
Indeed. It's great to be here. Thank you, Ron. A good friend of the Prout Financial Design team. Thanks for introducing us. Obviously, you are the voice for WTCM Radio in the mornings. Appreciate you, sir.
For a few hours.
Yeah.
For a few hours, anyway.
Well, it's great to be here. Joining us today is Heidi Cartwright. Good morning,
Hello.
Heidi.
Good morning. Merry Christmas to everybody.
Yep. What an awesome season. Our managing director and own Retirement Income Certified Professional. Great to have you with us, Heidi.
Thank you.
We have a lot going on today. And to Deanne Jennings, our Director of Operations. Hello back there.
Hello. Good morning, everyone. Hello. So happy to be with you this morning. And it feels like Christmas out there. I love this time of year.
It does, yeah. Even though we don't have any snow. Now, we do have a song possibly that might get people in the snow mood. Mm-hmm. Trans-Siberian Orchestra, First Snow. I'll mention it even on the radio here to see if we might be able to play it. About 26 seconds in, it gets exciting. Now, what's interesting is, I'm not going to introduce him yet. We have a guest. But next week, we're doing our Christmas show. And Steve in production has helped me with this. We've already recorded 2 stories from the Hallmark book that my grandfather, we called him Papa, on my wife's side, gave to Andy on his birth in 1984. And a couple of stories in that I think you'll find very helpful to get you in the Christmas spirit, as well as several songs. And also want to give a shout out to WTCM and Chris Warren specifically for granting that there would be no advertising or advertisements on the show that day. So it'll be advertisement free.
It is.
Thank you so much, Chris, and to WTCM for allowing us to do that. I guess it's probably, the 7th or 8th year that we've done the Christmas show. And just a shout out to Christmas and its meaning that hopefully will help us all get into more of that mood. And that is going to be broadcast on the 21st, Thursday at this time. And then on the rebroadcast, of course, on Saturday as well, given that everything works in the production area. So Steve is working on it even as we speak. And thank you to Steve. Oh, my gosh, it was fun recording that with him.
Steve Cook,
yes. I wasn't sure whether I should say his last name, but anyway, you said it. So we're good. Now, next joining us is John Slew, CPA. We're going to be talking about taxes today. And we have a bunch to talk about. Not only year-end tax planning, But this new case that's come up before the Supreme, well, that is, the Supreme Court is saying it's going to come up before them, will finally decide what income means, and it's got a whole lot of
ramifications.
Things. Huge.
Jumped right in.
Speaking of your conversation with the prof yesterday from Hillsdale about communism, this seems to almost veer, I'll say almost, veer into that belief system because it's the definition of income seems relatively obvious, and the Supreme Court has to weigh in on that. I mean, why? So what the email blast said was this. I'm not sure who wrote it, but I know him personally. Taxing unrealized gains may sound like something you see in Russia or hear about in fifth grade as a lofty aphorism. Apparently, however, the Supreme Court feels the need to weigh in on this one because, according to the Wall Street Journal, it's the most important tax case in decades. So we'll get to that after we talk about some basic year-end tax planning. Whether or not that'll be before or after the break, we'll see. But my gosh, there is a lot in this and a lot being written, and somewhat breathlessly what this could mean in terms of the tax landscape. Correct, John?
That is correct.
Well, let's get John Sluice fired up here. CPA, good morning, sir.
Good morning, and thank you for having me on. So, yeah, you're right.
Our pleasure.
There's so much implications on that. And are we going to talk about that later?
Or no? That later, yes. So as we get into it.
Because I can get on my soapbox and I can go
for my God.
He can take the whole show.
If I'm ready
on
to go,
one.
You can go.
It was a dramatic, I don't know how else to say it, a very interesting conversation we had before the show, because it's just, It could be very big, and that's why there's this much being written about it, and we need to know these things. I think there's a more of a need than ever for those of us who believe in capitalism, and I'll just say this in the American way, that we understand the positives and the negatives of capitalism, but also of Marxism and communism, what that's going to mean to us. So we're going to talk about that, but first, year-end tax planning. Now, when you were, we met twice on this, mm-hmm. and I loved honestly what you said about the general attitude of how one should think about taxes and or tax planning. Mm-hmm. So, if you could expand on that, what did you mean by that, and what were you driving at?
Well, what I drive at is I talk to those that when I'm communicating on tax planning, I never want to pay more taxes than we need to. In fact, my goal is to pay the lowest amount of taxes that we possibly can. But what I will say is I've never say this year. I always look at it as a lifetime, right? That is what the real tax planning that we're doing is. It's not one particular period, so whether it's a month, a year, or even a five-year span, it's a lifetime. And that is our goal, is to think about it as the big picture, how much taxes we're paying overall. What that may mean is we might pay a little bit more this year than next year or other years because we're looking at it at the big picture, the long range, and that's the way. Okay.
So stop. Just a moment. What you're saying, and I think that's important, is short-term thinking can wind up hurting you long-term financially.
Right. In practice, yes. Yes.
It's kind of basic, but it's...
It's basic, but that gets to the premise. And I think that's where I'm finding myself and why we started talking about this is this year in particular, there's not anything brand new, crazy, or we can go into all the things that we have to do for tax planning for year end and otherwise. But what we're back to is the tried and true tax planning. And I will say on it is we want to stick with our plan because as a tax professional, my goal, there's two types of tax planning I can do. One is timing difference and one are permanent differences. Most of the tax planning we do are timing difference. So all you're doing is pushing and pulling at one particular period. I'm not saying it's not good to do, and in fact, we use them as a tool all the time. But when you're doing it, is you want to look at it of why we're doing it. So if we're going to buy something this year to get an expense, or we're going to push income to next year, which are, again, the normal tax planning items that your accountants are talking through, do I buy the truck? Do I buy the piece of equipment? Do I hold off on this? Do I do a traditional versus a Roth contribution, all those normal type items, what they're fundamentally getting to are timing differences. Mm-hmm. And so we have to look at it and say, why are we doing it this year versus like 2024 or 2025 or 2022 when you look at it? So you have to look at the bigger picture to try to decide when you're doing those. And so we're, the the emotion that I try to get people that I work with on is looking at it and say, we want to pay less taxes, but overall, which may mean this year that if our plan was that we're down this year and we want to actually recognize some income this year, let's follow through on that this year. That's the key thing that I try to tell people.
So it's not in paying the tax, it's understanding what the tax brackets are and what you're paying is relatively a good value.
Yeah, it's a good. That's the way to look at it. It's a good value, and so I'll go into that a couple of things. That you got to know the bracket you're in, or know you are. So the tax advice that I'm going to give to someone that's in the tax 12% tax bracket is different than in the 22% bracket, which is different in the 35% bracket, right? So what I'm talking about, don't compare yourself to your neighbor, and that in itself is a hard thing. But you have to look at it at your own situation, so that way it is a value for you. Because if you're normally in the 35% bracket, and this year you find yourself in the 12 for whatever reason, we're going to recognize some income this year. So we're going to do contrary to what I might tell someone else to do, which is to push it off. But you got to know your circumstance within it.
Let's back up a bit.
Yeah.
Tell us about the tax brackets, John. I mean, you've wanted to say this for some time and tell us all a story about tax brackets, right?
I do. I dream about tax brackets.
Yeah, exactly.
And when we're speaking of this, we're speaking federal taxes, and we're also speaking federal income taxes, because that's actually going to come, and we're going to talk about that later when we talk about the Supreme Court. There are many, many more types of taxes than just income. But what
I'm sorry. I'm going to interrupt you here, but what does it mean when someone's paying 22%, are they paying 22% on all their income, part of their income? Tell us, John.
Yes. So in the United States, on your income tax, it is a graduated rate, which means the first portion of income, you might be at the 10%, and then you're going to pay at the 12%, and then you're going to pay at the 22, and then the 24, and then the 32, right? So I can go through those brackets. It's not like if you hit into the 32% bracket, all of your income is at 32%. So when you jump over into a new bracket, it's not like it's 100% in that new bracket. It's just the spillover amount. So I'm going to round here when I say this, just for understanding's sake. Let's say the first 10,000 is the 10% bracket, and the next 80,000 is at the 12% bracket. So if you made 30,000 in a year, the first 10 is at 10%, and the next 20 is at 12%. So it's not that you're all at 12, it's just the incremental.
So the top tax bracket that you're at, that's what that referring to.
That's
so in your example, 20,000 of your income is taxed at 12.
Right.
And 10,000 at 10%. At 10%. Mm-hmm. So you'll see the average tax, which what is the official term for the average tax someone
your effective
pay?
Tax rate.
Your effective tax rate might be 10.8%. Mm-hmm. That's what that means. Mm-hmm.
And then you have to go even further, because then you have to look at your deductions, like the standard deduction, and you have to look at your credits that are there to get even further calculate in those. So those are all factors where getting back onto the tax bracket is to know it, right? So if you're typically in the 32% bracket and all of a sudden you're in the 12, well, that means that we need to do things to actually give you income this year, because next year you're going to be back up. And again, if I look at that, you'll note I purposely picked that, because you're at 12% this year versus 32 next year. There's a 22% in there. So you might choose to pay that because it's a permanent difference versus a temporary difference.
So you would typically be rather uncomfortable with someone coming in at 1 year at 32 and the next year at 12. Obviously, they're going to be uncomfortable because their income's going to go down that much.
And generally speaking, when I'm working with people, I always tell them, you will love your accountant that year, that if I give, you're in the 12% bracket and you're used to paying in the 32, and you know, so let's say you're used to paying $400,000 in taxes and this year you paid two, right? You're going to love me. I'm going to be the best thing. Now, next year, you're not going to like me. So when we look for long-term relationships, we're looking at it and saying, I want you to pay less overall. So if this year you paid two, next year you paid 400, I'd rather have you pay 100 each year and you still paid less.
John, I love what you said earlier when we were talking. You said your job is, to the effect, your job is for your clients to pay less taxes over a lifetime, which is what you're talking about.
Right.
When you talk about, you know, planning in the future, the tax brackets that we have now, they'll expire, what, end of 24?
They sunset at the end of 2025.
25.
Is when they sunset. And so that's where, again, the default stance under the new tax law that's in place right now is if they do nothing, it goes back to what it was, which would have been at a higher bracket. Maybe it's, and again, I'm going to round, but maybe it's 15% and 30% or 25. So again, I've just been using the numbers 12, 22, and 32. well, the default might be to go to 15, 25, and 35. Again, I'm rounding and don't quote me specifics. But the idea there is even this year we might choose to take a little bit of income because in 2 years it might go up from the – if you're in the 22 this year, it might go to the 25%.
Oh.
We don't know, right? That's again, I always tell as well – my crystal ball is very, very cracked and very, very hazy. However, you know, we know and we work with the facts what we have right now.
What do you say to those people who say, I want to and need to pay zero? I mean, I hate taxes. I'm not going to pay any tax. How do you talk to those people?
Well, in general, I would tell you that.
That's a very interesting question.
I also want to pay zero, but at the same time, that generally means that you don't have any wealth building up, right? If you're paying taxes, it's because you have income. If you're not paying taxes, you're not. Or you're in the stage of where you're at where you're building your investment. So if you're redeploying your capital and you're reinvesting in items, you might not be paying any taxes right now because you're going to pay it later and you're choosing otherwise. So if you pay zero, I want to know why you're paying zero. And are you methodically doing it? Because if you're doing it and not doing those things and you're just trying to limit yourself, it doesn't end up well. And sure, we could not pay any taxes on that scenario, but it doesn't end well and you're not building your wealth.
Well, that makes it pretty simple. Mm. So, in essence, generally, a healthy situation is where you're paying some tax. You're just trying to manage that over time.
Yep.
And in essence, to my mind, moving a ship, if you will, to help it move in the direction of managing taxes, given the person or individual or company or whatever is managing its tax rate and also its own financial well-being over time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's managing the small little changes. A 2% permanent difference on a tax saving is huge. So it's the small incremental things that make the difference over a lifetime, for sure.
Now, paying taxes today versus tomorrow, are you always more positive about paying the taxes tomorrow versus today?
All things being equal, I'd rather pay tomorrow than today, absolutely. But generally speaking, things are not always equal. So again, that's where you got to look at, well, next year it might be better than this year, or we might have more opportunities next year versus this year. So, but by default, all things being equal, I'd rather pay next year than this year.
Now, you also referenced briefly, everyone compares themselves to their neighbor, and you consider that relatively negative. Why? Expand on that, if you would.
Well, so many levels there. We got the coveting inside of it, but we won't even go on that side of it.
Yeah.
But...
speaking of Marxism, you bring it up.
Yeah. Because it all one of the items is it gets into risk tolerance, right? So it gets into your neighbor might be willing to deploy $1 million worth of capital into a real estate property and therefore isn't paying any taxes. And then now you might be paying 12% taxes. Well, they just put $1 million in a building. You now have, let's say, $100,000 or $10,000 that you have in a checking account. Well, guess what? You can spend that a whole lot easier than the individual over here can spend on a house. You can't spend a building or a house, right? And so it's what do you use with the capital? What do you use what you're doing with it? And so there's facts and circumstance for every single person.
So
and
it's
it comes
recognizing,
back to a risk-reward.
Sorry, say that again.
It comes back to a risk-reward.
Yes.
Not that I'm setting or teeing this up for anything. But.
No kidding. It really comes down then. It points up our own individual talents.
Right.
And recognizing those talents and, if you will, appreciating them and also letting people have their own situation and recognizing that they're going to have positives and negatives with theirs as well. Whether or not they're paying any tax or not, they may be taking excessive risk that we couldn't stand personally,
like,
us and or our families around us.
Or to make it real, I might tell one person to go buy a bulldozer this year for $30,000, but if I told Deanne to go buy a bulldozer, that probably would not be sound tax advice, right? So you got to understand.
Right.
So.
But, that translates so well over to what Dennis and I do. When we talk to clients, we have to look at the individual situation because one rule or one pattern does not fit all because everybody has unique circumstances that we have to take into consideration. And so we like to walk in harmony with the tax planning to get the best situation between each side.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that because it's, again, it's recognizing other people have their individual talents. How can I do better with my own situation? How can I do the best with what I've got? How can I analyze where I'm at, what my talents and skills are to accentuate or move those ahead into the future? We've got some Christmas notes here from Deanne.
Yeah. So in honor of Christmas, we're going to have a little fun this morning and play some Christmas trivia. So you guys ready?
Ready.
And this is from Country Life, and the author is Jessica Lee Matter. So Heidi, true or false? Mm. George Washington loved eggnog.
I would say true.
This one is true. The founding father even had his own recipe where he forgot to note the number of eggs needed, but included, all be important, instruction, taste frequently.
Taste frequently. Right. I love it.
That's I mean, fun. We forgot it.
I know.
The secret sauce.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Dennis, true or false? Jingle Bells was always a Christmas song.
False.
You are correct. The now classic holiday tune Jingle Bells was written in the mid-19th century by James Pierpont. While he experienced a bout of homesickness while living in Savannah, Georgia, though debated, some believe it was originally written for a Thanksgiving program at his father's church. John, true or false? There was once a real-life Santa Claus.
Oh, this is tricky. This was not. She didn't give us ahead of time, so I'm going to say yes.
You are correct. True. Yeah. The Christian bishop of St. Nicholas was the inspiration behind the jolly man we all know and love as St. Nicholas. A generous, gift-giving clergyman lived in modern-day Turkey and devoted his life to helping the poor.
The answer is there's always a real Santa Claus. What are you talking about?
Yes, yes. Exactly. Always. Always.
I like that answer even better.
And Ron, one more here. And this is not true or false. It's a little trickier.
Oh, great.
Are Santa's reindeer male or female?
Yes.
Ding, 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 ding. Both male and female reindeer have antlers, but they shed them annual and grow a new larger set every year. Only females still have antlers at Christmas time since males shed them before winter begins once mating season has ended.
Wow. Oh. Well, there you go.
There we go. It's a little fun trivia.
Fun. I feel a little smarter.
Oh, my gosh, George. There's so many quips could be made about that, but none of them really are applicable on the radio. So we'll just keep moving, shall we? Yes, thank you so much. So we have an article here. Thank you, Deanne. That's awesome.
You're welcome.
Great. So this is a headline article from the Wall Street Journal, December 4th, about a week ago, if you will. The Supreme Court will finally decide what income means. The Supreme Court hears oral arguments Tuesday, and written by Hank Adler and Lacey Willis. Oral arguments Tuesday in the most important tax case in decades. In decades. Moore v. U.S. rather, will answer the question of whether Congress can tax unrealized capital gains as if they were income under the 16th Amendment. Unrealized capital gains. Now, what are unrealized capital gains, John? Yeah. It means that they're not recognized?
Correct. Are items that you have not realized, hence they're unrealized, but you haven't sold something. So let's use the example of a house. So the house today you bought 10 years ago, maybe you bought it for $100,000. It is now worth $500,000. Well, you haven't sold it yet, so you haven't realized it, right? You still are spending your mortgage on the $100,000 house. That's what you spent it for originally. It was $100,000. It might be worth, Zillow might tell you it's worth 500, and then tomorrow it's worth 400, and the next day it's worth 600. I'm exaggerating. But the unrealized is something that you have not recognized. You feel it, but you have not recognized it.
So the story in this is the cases before the justices is straightforward. In 2006, Charles and Kathleen Moore invested $40,000 in an 11% equity interest in foreign corporation. Between 2006 and 2017, the company was profitable, but reinvested all its earnings in the business. The Moores thus didn't receive dividends or any other income from the investment. Under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017, however, the Moores became subject to a new federal levy called the Mandatory Repatriation Tax. See if you can say that three times. Mandatory repatriation tax applicable to investors in overseas corporations. The new tax treated their share of the corporation's undistributed earnings as if they were actually received by the shareholders.
Right.
Received.
So they were unrealized.
Well, they were unrealized, but the tax is saying that even though it's unrealized, you have to pay the tax. The tax was retroactive, covering the entire period beginning with the Moore's initial investment through 17. The rate of tax was unusual. In essence, they owed, according to this, $14,729. Now, one of the quotes or notes in this article, if realization is no longer a requirement for taxable income, then income tax has no boundaries in the Constitution, and Congress can directly tax wealth. Ouch. Hmm. That's serious stuff. Among the briefs from those who want to save the law, several switch subject to other sections of the IRS code, saying that, anyway, that it should be taxable, and they're saying it's a red herring. Where do you fall in this whole thing here, John, and why is it important?
Well, where I fall, for one, is recognizing that this has much larger ramifications, right? The heading on this particular article talked about unrealized tax on unrealized. It's there. That's an implication of it. But there are many other implications, right? So as typical, when the Supreme Court is hearing something, it's over the definition of one sentence or one word or something like that. And that has ripple effect ramifications. So right here is, and again, they're not, in the particular case that they're even looking at doesn't relate to unrealized. It relates to the repatriation tax, right? There are other taxes that are out there, kind of what I alluded to earlier in the show when I qualified my answer and said, well, this is related to income tax. There are many other forms of tax that are there. Mm-hmm. And what the Supreme Court is looking at is what is the constitutionality of the legislation in Congress ability to tax, period. And what can they tax, period. That's what's getting to this. It has so much more ripple effects. So let's say it's going to be the unrealized. It's the wealth. It could be the tax, the flow-through tax of S-corporations and partnerships. There are many, many impacts that this could get to.
So this could be incredibly expansive. Obviously, this is a small amount they put in, $40,000, and the Supreme Court's going to weigh in on this
thing? The particular case is $40,000, which has an implied tax of $14,729.
Right.
That's the particular case that they're choosing. But just like, say, Roe versus Wade or others, right, you're going to refer to one particular case that has ramifications, and everyone's going to know that. So just like everyone knows that particular case, everyone will know this particular case depending on what is or isn't concluded on.
Now, why could this be damaging to the United States economy for people who take risks and make investments to have to pay income tax if their property or real estate or stock or any other kind of appreciating investment, they would be required, therefore, to pay tax on the gain in
houses,
the value of
houses,
that.
Business owners. It will fundamentally change the cost benefit and fundamentally change the risk reward calculations. It will be updated. It will move, but it will change it, right? So an investor today is willing to do a calculated risk with a calculated return, taxes factored in. If you start taxing it, the risk-reward calculation changes, and it's going to have monumental impacts, not to mention complexities.
Now, this is from Wikipedia. I copied this off just for a Marxist, Ron, would conclude that capitalism exploits and oppresses the proletariat. Therefore, capitalism will inevitably lead to a proletarian revolution. In a socialist society, private property as the means of production would be replaced by cooperative ownership. In essence, the state takes all of your property and decides through cooperative what the best use and or makeup of that property should be and how we should all join together in that work to be a cooperative. Cooperatives were big in Russia in the 40s and 50s, and they worked so well to help production and food lines, as that gentleman from Yugoslavia, who is now a prophet, Hillsdale, talked about. We all know that it doesn't recognize basic human nature. If you or I are willing to take risk, in essence, in a good society, I'll just say it that way, we should be rewarded for taking that risk. In essence, what this, to my mind, is saying, they're going to investigate or go into having us all be taxed on our own risk-taking and our successes, thus removing the benefit. There's always a cost-benefit ratio. If that benefit is removed, guess what? People aren't going to pay the cost. And they're going to move or navigate to those areas where they're continuing to be rewarded for having taken those risks.
Right. And the particular case itself is actually, again, even higher than that, because it's saying that that would be one option. There would be other options as well. But yes, I mean, what you're getting to right there is the fundamental of why they're looking at it. I'd also argue that they're going to look at one side but not see the other side, right? We are in a capitalist society, so give the opportunity, and I'm going to give an accountant or attorney the opportunity to find something as a way to respond to what they do when we're going to do that, right? So if they go down this line and they start taxing unrealized gains, and again, I'm not saying we want to go there.
Sure.
But if they do, you better believe I'm going to do everything I can to now take it for the best interest of who we're working for. So now all of a sudden I'm going to say, well, I'm going to try to find unrealized losses or otherwise, right? So we're going to try to find loopholes around or strategies around, and you're just going to continue to plan. It's just going to continue the cat and mouse game that goes back and forth. But why spend dollars? Because that's the friction inside of an economy, right? You're spending dollars that aren't benefiting the economy at that point.
So. They aren't at all, and it's creating a much more egregious, to me, government entity that's got to oversee all of this and write all the laws. Right. You know, what if something does appreciate and then I've got a loss on it 2 years later? Am I able to write that off, or is it only going to be, you know, I only write it off if we decide that you've been able to qualify within our parameters of being able to write that off?
Right.
You know, I can see it being a revenue generator in the short term, and in the long term, a destructor of, again, risk-taking.
Right. The capitalist is not going to reinvest back into what they're doing.
No.
So. Well, and practically speaking, it sounds like a nightmare to me, because trying to keep track of all these gains and losses, they're unrealized, and things go up and down over time. That's the nature of the market. It's the nature of real estate, all these different investments and risks that you take. And if you're trying to tax when it's profitable, you know, what are you going to do with it? It goes down, and then how many years do you have to go back? I mean, it just sounds like a lot of record keeping and a lot of paperwork.
And I would say, and you're looking at it even from the viewpoint of a publicly traded investment portfolio. Mm-hmm. Now go even further onto it on the, what's the value of the bulldozer that I told Deanne to go buy, right? Has that gone up in value or down in value? There's an unrealized, right? So you start talking about all those things. You have to get equipment appraisals. You have to have business appraisals. You have to have all
exactly,
the house items. So, and again, I'm going to further point out that we're honing in on this particular case on the implications of the unrealized tax. There are other ramifications as well, which is the repatriation. There is the pass-through income from S corporations and partnerships. So there's so much more implications in than just even the unrealized.
So it's also about the business form that someone might use in terms of what that could mean for them, whether or not they've got to declare that income. Is that what you're
saying,
John?
Correct. Yeah. So I mean, it's entity selections. It's long-term considerations of ordinary versus passive income. So it has ripple effects beyond the scope of even what we're contemplating right now.
So this is something that everyone should be aware of. And frankly, for those who want to have input to their congressperson about getting some feedback on this and what it's really going to possibly do to an economy like ours.
The Supreme Court will only rule on the legislation the way it was written. And if they rule that it's constitutional and uphold it, then it would be up to Congress to make the case that this is not good policy.
Right, because at the end of the day, what they're opining on is this one simple sentence here, which is the amendment. It's the 16th Amendment to Congress, which says it gives the Congress the right to lay and collect taxes on income from whatsoever source derived without apportionment among the several states.
What so they're actually going
to one sentence that they're opining on as to whether or not that's legal or not legal, and within what is within that the definition and others.
Income.
I'm just shocked that the Supreme Court has to weigh in what income is. That's why I refer back to the fifth grade. It's like, hello, seriously, do we? I'm glad that they're weighing in. I just hope that they weigh in properly on this one and recognize it for what it is. You know, it's
It's sometimes hardest to define the simplest concepts, and there's a reason that you don't, right? It's a similar idea. What is the definition of a deduction? What is? There are certain things you're just like, it just is. Again, you can go into what they are, right? But at the same time, sometimes the simplest are...
Although Bill Clinton asked, depends what the definition of is.
Right, is, right?
And Bill Clinton's moral compass was incontrovertible. So we all agree at him. You know, he was something, you bet.
Hey, we have a question for, John and or Dennis. Do deductible IRA contributions wipe out capital gains dollar for dollar for tax purposes? Do deductible IRA contributions wipe out capital gains dollar for dollar for tax purposes?
I'm going to let you take that one, John.
Yeah, thanks. Well, it depends on the definition of does. As my normal response as an accountant, it's never a straightforward answer. So deductible IRAs are ordinary, and capital gains are capital gains and of that, so they're different. So the short answer of that is no, but not I feel like I'm a Supreme Court justice here. No. Not because it has anything to do with the question he's asking, but just because of the nature of the different types of income they are. Now, they may, but on premise to answer that question is no, because it doesn't directly relate to. Now, you may have one of the consequences of having a deduction on an IRA and have capital gains. They may offset each other, but it depends on your facts and circumstances.
It depends on the overall income that you've got along with your capital gains and how those figure together. The deduction may be helpful. That's what you're saying.
Yep.
In terms of driving down your income, it certainly will be helpful in your regular income tax. Whether or not it's partially usable against your capital gains is what I would say will remain to be seen, given your overall income and the amount of the capital gain.
And how I will oftentimes word this is, it's really good to understand that the IRS in general is not a charitable organization. It is their belief and desire to get the most amount possible. So if they have their ability to limit particular certain losses and not limit gains, they will do so.
Mm-hmm.
And it may not seem fair, but they just sit back and smile and say,
That's why we don't want more income to be declarable to them in the in this particular case, income from unrealized gains. That's not income. That's unrealized and unrealized gain. You know, it's not in your pocket.
It's money you didn't make.
No. Yeah. Did you put that in your wallet? No, I did not. So it's not income. Income is revenue received, right? From a variety of sources, which we all know intuitively what income is. Yeah. Please, really. All right. Some of you may be wondering why I come out so strongly against communism and Marxism in particular. I saw it as a high schooler. I was with Musical Youth International, and we went overseas. I think it was in 77. And I saw East Berlin, West Berlin, Hungary, the impact of communism and how it destroyed people methodically, destroyed their will to want to achieve. And you could see it in their country. You could see it in their eyes and their faces. There was the energy. It was an amazing picture as we went through Checkpoint Charlie and saw the Berlin Wall, which they had to build to keep their people in, because who wants to live in that kind of stuff, right? So the overall impact of not recognizing people's will to want to achieve, for their need to be able to worship God, if you will. Now, all those things that we count as freedoms, they just try to wash away. And they're still trying to deny it today. We can see it it's easy to see. The impacts are devastating to a population and to its people overall in the long term. And so this unrecognizable place, Marxism doesn't want to recognize our own history. That's why they're trying to destroy our own history of who George Washington was, Ben Franklin, and all the rest. It's no longer a mystery. It's due to Marxism and the communist view of, it was all a proletariat that was trying to have its way with the people. Whether it was slavery or whatever it was, you can mix or put all of those together into one form and fashion and see what it is they're trying to influence. And it's one thing, we get it, but it's just burned into my memory so significantly because to see it firsthand, the dogs, the guns, and all the rest, the barbed wire that we're trying to keep people in to a place that had no freedoms, and the ways in which people tried to get out of it were amazing at Checkpoint Charlie. They would obviously risk their very lives to try to get to just be able to be in freedom, which we sometimes, and I'll speak for myself as well, take very much for granted.
So. Yeah, and I think that's the challenge in general of all of this, is because the underlying intention and thought of it is good. That's why it's there.
Oh, yeah,
but
it is.
But what it fails to recognize is the fact that there's just the innate nature of who we are and what we are.
Yeah.
And those don't correlate with each other.
No, they don't. Mm-hmm. From a high view, this could be a great idea. Well, we'll all work together. Right. In reality, doesn't work.
So taxing unrealized gains, in theory, could be great. However,
from a legal standpoint, what are we so concerned about? From a moral and political and life standpoint, not so much. Yeah. All right. So do we still have some time? What's going on here with the state of Michigan? It's actually cutting its tax.
Correct. So there's two different tax changes this year. And I don't have much time to talk about this because Ron's jumping up and down and saying I have to be quick. And nothing happens with me quickly. But what I would say is, one, just be aware that in Michigan in 2023, the tax rate was decreased on a one-time item for that. There was excess cash that was in the general fund, and then that's the way to get it back. So that's in place. But even bigger news is they are changing fundamentally retirement income and the taxable nature of retirement income in Michigan. It's being phased in over time. So there's some, it starts in 2023 and goes through 2026. Fundamentally trying to compete against, like, say, Florida and Arizona, where it's income tax free. It's not income tax free, no income tax. It's trying to get into that for retirees. So again, going very, very quickly, just be aware if you have retirement income, things are changing in the state of Michigan.
And they're getting better in essence, because they're cutting the tax for retirees who have retirement income.
Yep.
All right, that wraps it up for today. Mr. Dennis Prout, Prout Financial Design, along with Heidi Cartwright, Deanne Jennings, special guest John Sluice, InTrust CPA in Traverse City.
Thanks,
Thank you
Ron.
All for being in today.